the Ball's cash machine.
We've given away hundreds of thousands of euro across the Go Loud network of stations. For your chance to win, tune in to Off the Ball Breakfast, weekdays from 7:30 on the Off the Ball app, and we'll give you the all-important cash amount.
Oh my God.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Optimum Nutrition, proud sponsor of the Gaelic Players Association.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Optimum Nutrition, proud sponsor of the Gaelic Players Association.
All right, you're very welcome along. We've got a very busy show for you. Cathy McNamee is going to join us off the top after Ireland's 3-1 win in Portlaoise last night against the French. Seamus Flanagan is going to help us to preview the All-Ireland hurling final and reflect on Limerick's season. Sue Ronan will give us further analysis of Ireland's performance last night. And Nathan's going to join us from Troon, where Tiger Woods has been taking a machete? Is that? Or a bazooka? To... Colin Montgomery, who's like, ah, Tiger, it's finished. Give it up. He's like, well, I mean, I'm out to play until I'm 60 here because, oh, checks notes, I won this. Colin, you're not allowed to play because you never won it. And then Nathan described it as drove over in the bus and then reversed and then drove over him again. And then the stop it, he's already dead meme. He's like, no, I'm going to keep going.
It was bad enough that Rory McIlroy was spoken about in the same breath as Colin Montgomery on this very show yesterday morning. But for Colin Montgomery to be zoning in on Tiger Woods, never mind Rory McIlroy, is probably a step too far.
I mean, maybe he has a point. Maybe Tiger is totally finished, but you wouldn't put it past Tiger to be able to... There's a storm blows at the British Open and he has four even par rounds or finishes two over par and that's enough to get you into a playoff. Mm-hmm. You know, at some point, if it's going to be a 22 under par... It's not likely that he's going to be able to do anything.
No.
But there is a world in which, you know, hitting four stingers on a par five and tapping in for par is going to be the best play. And Tiger suddenly is capable of doing something. So anyway, we'll do that a little bit later on. An incredible night for Irish football last night because Rovers, I don't know if you've all seen the penalty at this stage. I saw it on Johnny Ward's Instagram where it's 97 minutes on the clock. Pico Lopez commits a foul. Rovers are 2-1 up. Vikingur get a penalty and send the goalkeeper the wrong way. And then it just squirts off the post wide. And suddenly Shamrock Rovers' season is made. They lost 2 million last year by not qualifying for any group stages. And they still haven't qualified for group stages yet, but they're going to have three more opportunities as a result of this win last night. Whereas if they'd lost, it was like, oh, Jesus. So, you know, such sliding doors moments make seasons, make clubs, make careers.
There's something about the aesthetics at Tallaght Stadium that makes the people who are flailing their arms behind the ground, behind the goal, just that bit more distracting, I think, because it's not this like mass of bodies. Like if you're playing in like the ginormous Premier League ground, you can actually see each individual child waving their arms. And to be fair, the goalkeeper was giving it socks as well. Sent the goalkeeper the wrong way and just fluffed his lines.
Given it socks, but ultimately useless. What was the penalty shootout in the GAA this year where everybody strolled around?
Mayo Derry. Well, that was, of course, there was nobody sitting in that stand. And then the Mayo steward was like, oh, you seem to have got past me there, Mayo kids.
I was at the quarterfinals last year of Monaghan and Armagh.
Oh, yeah.
Right in the Davin, waiting to see where the penalties were going to be taken. They all started coming down our end. It was perfect.
They start waving your hands.
come down.
Are they always the Davin in Croker? Is that fixed or is there a toss for that? I don't know.
That day it looked like there was a toss, but right. Maybe that's sure. For who goes first, maybe.
There's a toss in every other ground.
To see which end it is?
Yeah, there was definitely a... Yeah, I'm pretty sure there is. And I say that now and I'm like, I'm now second guessing myself. I'm pretty sure they do toss to see which way they go.
We'll send the Morse code out to Tommy to get the official rule book exactly what happens because I presume it matters. I mean, if you're against the Dobes and it's into Hill 16, it does matter, right? Does it? I don't know.
I'd say definitely. Well, 100% it does. Like everybody says that it matters kicking into the hill regardless of what sort of fans are there. So, although that is from point taking mostly. Of course it matters. I'm not sure we're going to see any more this year, though.
No, we can't see any more this year. Oh, can we after extra time?
You can have replays, yeah.
So there's only one replay?
I believe so. Again, Tommy Rooney, where are you?
Okay, so Ireland, Denise O'Sullivan, Cork week begins. Cork and Galway week. Are we seeing anything from the fact that it was a Galway United player who I see he's getting credited with an assist for Denise O'Sullivan's goal, which, you know, a lot of work for Denise O'Sullivan still to do to ping it in from 30 yards. Colin's not here, but he was asking if we wanted to, you were asking if you wanted to rank the goals.
Well, what would happen in any game where more than one good goal has been scored, Colin takes it upon himself to rank set amount of goals, because you just can't take joy from enjoying everything anymore. You have to put a hierarchy on everything.
Yeah.
And so,
says the man who invented GAA power rankings, which have subsequently been stolen by every single other media organisation in the country. But go on.
Maybe we could power rank the power rankings.
Yeah.
Who has the best power
rankings?
Yours
is number one, obviously.
He did get in touch. He's away right now, obviously. And he did get in touch with his ranking, and he's gone for Julianne Russell as goal of the night as opposed to Denise O'Sullivan's goal. So I'm not sure, is that controversial? Is that something that we expected? I guess it was the winner, Julianne Russell's goal, and maybe there's a certain pressure when you're 1-0 up, but I'd say there was a certain pressure when you're at deadlock and you're playing in front of your own fans and you've got this amazing opportunity to turn the screw a little bit on a France team that were there for the taking. I think it's fair to say that Ireland, from the very first minute, the way they pressed, the energy they brought up front, looked like this could be a night where they could actually really cause a bit of an upset. And it was a big upset, despite the changes that France made. It's still one of the best teams that Ireland have beaten in international women's football ever. And I think from the moment that you saw like Leanne Kiernan and Russell, to be fair, just chasing down every ball that was being pinged up front, you kind of knew that there might be an opportunity here for Ireland, because it was working. So I think there was a sense of pressure at nil-all, that there was something at stake here, that Ireland could do something, but they had to put the ball in the back of the net. And there was a couple of moments, Russell and Kiernan as well, where they kind of fluffed their lines, I think it's fair to say, in the opening 40, 50 minutes. So when the ball falls to Denise O'Sullivan from outside the box, I definitely think there was a lot on the line there, and I wouldn't say it was floodgates opening or anything like that, but all of a sudden the Irish players started looking at one another, thinking to themselves, right, there's more goals that available here.
Yeah, you hope that there's been a proper confidence level surging through the team, and that now they believe that everything that they've done and are doing is beginning to bear fruit, and this is a significant turning point, as opposed to so they've got to back this up, obviously, and the chances of them backing it up now, we understand it's going to be a two-legged playoff against a League C team, and then there'll be a decent team in the final playoff that we play to qualify for the Euros. But they've got to just qualify for the Euros now and ride this wave and continue to get the coverage, continue to get the big attendances, and continue to see improved performances both in the league here in Ireland and for anybody who's going to England and further afield, and just to make sure that there's proper strength and depth now, because there was a lot of criticism of the management team up to this point, and some of it I thought was unfair, some of it was probably fair, but was also, you're playing three unbelievably good teams, and so we're going from not being very good to being decent and trying to cling on to that top tier of teams. And I think you could definitely overrate last night given the changes that France made, but everything's trending in the right direction, and now just back it up, get to the Euros and see what happens then.
What was the last moment when a player who's playing domestic football in Ireland scored such a big goal for Ireland in men's or women's football?
I don't know.
It's a question that I don't have the answer to. I'm sure somebody out there will have the answer, because I certainly can't recall it. Certainly my entire life has been spent watching players who play for English teams coming over and showing how good it is to play in a different country and showing the standard to get to. I thought that was one of the great storylines from the Julianne Russell appearances over the last couple of games and her couple of goals was the fact that it is a Galway United player who's been doing this. So that's pretty cool. Of course, the question was asked immediately afterwards. Are you and the child going to be moving over to England anytime soon? Is there going to be a big move for you over there? But yeah, like the confidence that this brings is probably the biggest thing. Like I do think that after they play the League C team and they should win that relatively comfortably, there probably would have been that confidence boost anyway. But there's a chance that Ireland end up coming up against a team that is ranked higher than them in the FIFA world rankings. So Portugal
it's not,
and Scotland.
It's not guaranteed, exactly.
Portugal and Scotland are ranked 21st and 23rd in the world, respectively. Ireland are ranked 25th in the world. You'd imagine that Portugal and Scotland will both be two of the teams that will be in the draw for Ireland in the second round. The highest ranked teams that they can get in the first round are Slovenia and Romania at 40 and 45. So they're probably the two that they want to avoid on Friday. If they don't get Slovenia or Romania, it should be a much more comfortable draw.
Yeah. So we'll get through to the second draw.
Yes. Yeah.
And what happens then, we shall see.
There's also a chance of getting Ukraine in there as well. I mean, for the last European Championships, Ukraine were the ones who dished out the heartbreak to Ireland.
Well, obviously, self-inflicted.
Ireland dished out the heartbreak to Ireland, speaking of penalty misses and all that. But Ukraine, there's narrative there. Scotland, there's narrative there, maybe from their side, getting one back over Ireland. Obviously, Ireland played Wales before the start of this Nations League campaign and were comfortably second best. In other words, wasn't a competitive fixture, so you can't read into it too much. So yeah, that second fixture is going to be very, very interesting, and it's all going to be tied up this side of Christmas.
Julian Russell's father is from Cork. We were reliably informed right. by Colm Bouygues last night, so it was all coming up Cork. Does that have anything to do with the hurling at the weekend? I mean, I'd say, you know, Cork people would tell you. Did you see they sold out the viewing party?
Yeah.
In Páirc Uí
Chaoimh? No, it's in, I think it's in Páirc Uí Rinn, because it's 15,000.
Okay.
Or maybe it is in Páirc Uí
Rinn. No, I think it is
Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Páirc Uí Chaoimh, all right. Yeah.
They crashed the website after 10 minutes after.
Wow.
They are eager down there.
It's mad. I've definitely already heard sounds of people who've just given up on the search for tickets, that it's just too much of a dogfight. There's no chance to get, like clubs, certain clubs who haven't got tickets or have just got a tiny, tiny amount relative to their membership. So it's going to be quite difficult. Just the one thing on Páirc Uí Chaoimh is that, like, the aesthetics of that stadium last night were just stunning. Like, seeing the black bags on the scoreboard was one of the greatest things I've ever seen in Irish football. Like, enough so that the call-on was still there, that there was still just a good GA tint to it, and the black bag rippling in the wind as Ireland had taken a two goals and no points to no goals and no points lead at one stage. And also, when you're trying with every sinew of your body to hold on to a lead, having this acre of space behind the goal was just a magnificent thing to have. I think the ball people had stopped doing their job, and Courtney Brosnan was allowed to walk 2 miles out to collect the ball at certain stages. And who was it that went down with cramp late in the game as well? I mean, they knew how to play this perfectly. They were in a great situation, and they knew that they were. But Páirc Uí Chaoimh, got to have more of this, I think.
Well, are Super Value the luckiest sponsors in the history of Irish sports? Right? All of a sudden, the Cork hurling team are reborn as soon as the controversy happens?
Like, you'd forget that was a controversy. It seems like the birth of a brave new era for Cork as opposed to any sort of controversy.
Far from, like, rejecting and rebelling against the Cork fans, are just going to start calling it, I'm going down to Super Value and they'll mean Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Should all Irish football matches now be played in Páirc Uí Chaoimh as a result of this?
More. I think it was just over 18,000 people there. It sounded like it was double that. The noise of the first goal. That the last time Ireland played France, 607 people turned up to the game, and over 18,000 last night. So that was a pretty big step up from a Cork perspective. And yeah, everything's coming up Super Value. Like this, it's been kind of like a double whammy for them: Super Value and Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and also Tommy Walsh on Off the Ball before the Munster hurling final a few weeks ago was waxing lyrical about the greatest Super Value in Ireland, which is where? It's in Cork, in Clonkilty.
Yeah, is it?
And it's like it's an undisputed. Like, it's not actually a matter of opinion. It's one of those.
I thought it was Garvey's in Tralee. Is that not your favorite? Your local one with the good deli.
It's one closest to my heart, right. But it's not. I can understand. I can separate the art from the artist, and what they've done with the place in Clonkilty is just absolutely sublime.
Is it?
Have you been?
What?
Cheesemonger, fishmonger, whatever monger you like. As Tommy Walsh exclaims, they have a popcorn machine, which is not something that you generally expect from your local Super Value. So anybody down in Clonkilty.
How did I miss this? And how do Tipperary people feel about the Red Storm Rising in Cork? You're looking on going, this is grand. Or are you desperately hoping that Clare pummel them?
No. For me anyway, I feel more inclined, let's keep this revel rising just for this year and not to have Clare win. I don't know why that is, but somewhere deep inside me, I actually, it hurts to the thought of Clare winning on Sunday.
Why so?
I don't know what it is. I've studied in Cork, so maybe it's something to do with that as well. I don't find the Cork fans as annoying as a lot of people do.
That's because they haven't won yet.
Yeah, wait, just wait.
I don't know. I'm struggling with the Clare fans, you know.
Now, saying that,
2 weeks ago, I wasn't shouting for Kilkenny to beat Clare, so it's all very mixed emotions.
Oh, the poor Tipperary people, they're so conflicted. They hate everybody equally.
Well, Clare, I think the Clare people hate us more as well.
Well, I can understand Clare hating Tip, because like for 1,000 years, it was a punishment beating almost every time they played. And then there was like a little period where it was okay, and then Tipperary were like, no, no big deal, squash, again. And now all of a sudden it's like... So, do you feel like Tipperary are in a dark period at the moment where you're actually going to be watching everybody around you win?
Thanks for bringing that up at 7:45. But my answer, this is the first time in a while now that I felt guilty about getting an All-Ireland final ticket. And now that I tell people that I have my ticket got for the match on Sunday, people say, oh, do you deserve the ticket now? Because I say, well, if I'm going to be waiting for Tipperary to get to an All-Ireland final, I might not be going to an All-Ireland for a few years.
And now you can't go home either.
So it's... Look, you can see what happens very quickly. I mean, like Cork, when they fell to Waterford down in Walsh Park, I was down at that game, and you could see that was the end of Pat Ryan and where this Cork team going to go. Fast forward on now a couple of months and look where you are. So things can change very, very quickly. So Tip will be back next year. That's all I'm saying.
The last time Tip were in an All-Ireland hurling final, tickets eventually went on general sale. That's how low the demand was for the 2019 All-Ireland hurling final.
There's a common denominator because that happened last year as well.
Kilkenny.
There's another team there involved.
Yes, there's another team there. Involved. Tipperary can't fill it out their own. Only Cork could do that.
True.
Who was somebody on saying Kilkenny never complained about... Kilkenny management never complained about their team being surrounded by the opposition. Was it somebody saying it on air or was it off air?
I was saying it on Monday morning after Jack O'Connor's comments.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They don't care.
There might be a lesson in that. It's 7:47. It's time for the cash machine.
Off the Ball's cash machine.
So Brian Sinnott was at work on Friday when he received the cash machine call. He became our latest big money winner of cash machine when he told us the very important and very large cash machine amount. Congrats, Brian. Great way to start the weekend last weekend. And there's an opportunity for somebody to start the weekend the same way this week. On Friday, July the 19th, somebody's going to have the chance to win $150,000. Imagine what you could do with that money. Taking part's easy. I'm going to give you the number. €150,000. Take note of it, enter, and if we call you, you give us the number, you win the cash. Text OTB to 57557. Cost is £250 plus your standard message rate to play. Got to be over 18, you're playing across the Go Loud network of stations. Text OTB to 57557. Get your entry in by 3 o'clock on Friday the 19th of July, and then the cash machine will randomly pick one entry. It could be you that we're calling. Answer within 5 rings, tell us the amount, and the cash is yours. €150,000 exactly. That's 57557 is the text number.
Off the Ball's cash machine.
The UK papers are obviously obsessed with Southgate and the end of the Southgate era. As we kind of predicted, it was coming to an end. Stronger, kinder, that's David Heitner. The end was brutal, but Gareth Southgate deserves credit for transforming the England team. You made us believe again is the back page of the London Times. England stars pay tribute as Southgate quits after defeat in Euros final. Where does he go next? What's the job that he gets next? Is it an administrative job within the FA? I'm not sure they're actually the only English papers I have here. Jumping few hoops. Jumping, Denise and Co. make one giant leap, W-O-N. Very confusing. And then few hoops is the second part of that sentence, which isn't a sentence because it's about a different story. And it's, whew, sore head and sore heart, but Bradley boys triumph on special nights. So that's Shamrock Rovers beat Vikingur 2-1. Lee Carsley looks like he's going to be the interim manager, bringing England to the Aviva, giving us a sense of what might have been. If they can't get Eddie Howe, who is the other one who they are definitely going to get?
Fair play to Lee Carsley. Really hope this happens. Like it does feel that in the interim, it does. Like they're not going to take Eddie Howe in the interim. Like Eddie Howe is a longer term midway through the season when things at Newcastle potentially don't go too well?
Well, very quickly it has emerged that there's a 5 million buyout clause.
Right.
And once the figure's in the papers, it becomes, and if he's the man they want, then it's 5 million quid. Like, it's just a negotiation. Newcastle say, no, he's our manager, he's our staff member. He's not a staff member, he's not an employee, he's under contract. And so he's a contractor. And so therefore, you'll see that once that figure became public, how does that become public? Somebody wants it to become public. Mm-hmm. And that's either Newcastle wants it to become public, Eddie Howe wants it to become public, or the FA wants it to become public. So really quickly, just this is congealed on Eddie Howe. There's no ifs, ands or buts. Carragher's in the paper saying, oh, it's our best against the world's best. It has to be him. This is ridiculous, the notion of, he says, look what happened with Capello. Like, Fabio Capello, Guardiola and Klopp are not the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Fabio Capello was a dour, not particularly pleasant, perfect for a club. Jurgen Klopp would be a brilliant manager.
I haven't seen the full Carragher thing, but is he saying that about Pep and Klopp, or is he saying that about other international managers that might come in?
Oh, he's saying specifically those two. Yeah, people are suggesting these two should come in. That's ridiculous. It can't be. Sure, everybody knows international football is different from club football. It's like, yes, we do. But
to be honest, I think it's ridiculous because I just don't think either would be overly interested in the gig.
The only way that you can see Klopp might being interested is he says he wants to take the year out. Is you give Carragher the job for the year and you say, we've signed Klopp up, we're giving him his year off. And
what about the Liverpool factor here? Like, would Jurgen Klopp, would that, I've got to be careful, like, I don't want to use the phrase damage his legacy or anything like that, but how would Liverpool fans feel about one of their own managing England and standing for the anthem before every game and all that? And
I'd say it could be an outbreak of peace.
Yeah, and to be fair, look, I mean,
Plenty
of their players have played for England. It's not like there's been a boycott or anything like that. It's just it's just something that crossed my mind.
Sorry, I did have the Telegraph as well. That was it. Newcastle, hands off Howe, is that one. To the rest of the back pages, they're all about Ireland. I actually don't have the Times or the Indo this morning. Green Giants, Ireland 3, France 1. A lark in the park for Ireland. Pork, to do it justice. Ireland 3, France 1 is the back of the Mail. Ireland's Parc de Triomphe.
Brilliant.
There you
Top
go.
Of the morning to you.
Top of the morning.
That's the Herald. Top of the morning to you. Oh, Cameron, you've got a lovely voice. O'Sullivan, Return to Cork was written in stars. Was it written in the stars? Kathleen, good morning to you.
Morning, guys. How are things?
That was pretty good.
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the most fun results I've watched this team play for the last couple of years that I've been following them.
What was the difference this time around?
I think the difference last night was that a lot of the games that we've played, we've looked like scoring opportunities, but we haven't actually taken them. Whereas last night, it felt like we did. I think Ciara Grant made a really good point last night whenever I was on with her after the game, that it wasn't that we scrambled in three goals against like a poor French team. They were three pretty well taken goals. Maybe the Anna Patton one was a bit more of a scramble than the other two, but the other two were really well taken, really well placed, and it felt like a fitting bow to put on this term in terms of what we have seen from the team and how they've been changing their football. I was saying during the week that I was looking for like a little bit more of consistency from the team, and last night it felt like they hit that consistency, that hit that string of form. And I think it sets us up in a really nice way to go into the playoffs now.
We've been speaking a lot about the confidence factor in all of this. I think that's particularly true when it comes to Denise O'Sullivan, that it's been tough for that type of player to exist in League A when Ireland don't have much of the ball, when her magic is not allowed to show itself. And obviously she's been missing for a couple of the games as well. So I do think just her playing really well, scoring the goal last night, is possibly the most important individual piece of confidence that Ireland can take out of the results.
Yeah, and the fact that she was saying last night, and I think it's in an interview that's going out this morning, that, you know, Colin Healy had said to her going into the game, you're going to score a goal tonight. And her automatic reaction was like, yeah, I am. And I asked her about whenever Julianne Russell put that goal in front of her, put that ball in front of her, we were in the press box and we were all almost like half up whenever that ball was presented, because it looked like she was about to go and score something and do something brilliant. And, you know, I would I would say that we probably still don't see the full magic of Denise O'Sullivan and what she can actually do in that Ireland squad just because of the position that we require her to play. But last night, it just looked like she was enjoying her football. And that's something that we don't get to see all that often from Denise in a green jersey because of the role we require her to do. You know, she talked about it after the World Cup, how much it took her until the final game to actually enjoy her football. Last night, it looked like she had the absolute run of Parky Huive. She was dictating the play. She was dictating everything that was happening. The goal was just the icing on the cake. And the fact that she was like involved in the build-up for the other two goals as well just added to the whole thing. So definitely the sort of player that we want to see involved a little bit more, as you're saying, but to have her have that opportunity in Cork of all places. And again, like yesterday, it was 12 years since the last time the women's team played in Cork. She also scored. It was against France. It was her debut. You know, it was almost all written in the stars. The minute the goal hit the back of the net, you could just see everyone in the press box be like, perfect. That's our stories written for the evening. And then you get Julianne Russell scoring on top of that. And they're like, ah, what more could you want?
What about the Katie McCabe situation? It seems like she's a left back for Ireland and that's her best position for us.
Yeah, like she started out in a more central role and then swapped with Jessu. I actually think that the swap was more to suit Jess than it was to Katie. Like I said to you guys before, and I said it on Koi Gig as well, that I don't know if the last couple of games have been maybe the best that we've seen Katie in green jersey. And I would have said the same for last night. I was kind of hoping that after the fact of missing the game, coming back in, that you would see something a little bit different from her, but we didn't really. Although I would say a lot of the players talking about it after the game all said about how important she was to making sure that they kind of kept their heads after that first goal, and especially the second one whenever the France goal went in, because that felt like a moment that we very easily could have lost things. So maybe it's just the fact that she's doing a lot more work off the ball than maybe we're used to her seeing. But yeah, that left back role is probably the one that she's most suited to at the moment in an Irish jersey. I mean, a lot of Irish fans and a lot of people who follow this team would love to see her being able to play a little bit higher. Maybe that's something we see in the playoffs, considering the sort of teams that we're going to be going up against. But for now, that's probably where she's going to stay.
Julianne Russell has obviously been one of the big stories of the back-to-back games. Let's hear from her now. Here she is talking about the experience of the last two games and her new celebration.
Can you just describe the moments on the field with baby Rosie?
Really, really emotional. She just turned one there a couple of weeks ago, and I never thought I'd be playing with Ireland again, to be honest. So to get that call from Eileen was amazing. I can't really describe the feeling, and then to get minutes, I suppose, the last day, and then to start today, it just seems like it's all a dream, to be honest, at the moment. I think I need a few days to reflect and to take it all in, and I'm just so proud, and yeah, I'm buzzing.
Maybe you might be away from her a few weeks next summer if you can.
Yeah, hopefully. I think we'll bring her with us if we go. She's the camp baby now, so yeah, we'll see.
Nice moment whenever you ran over to the team and everyone did her celebration with you.
Yeah, it's going to be iconic now, I think. It's brilliant. We've been messing doing it all week, and to get another goal and be able to do it again was just special.
I actually spotted some of the hardcore supporters in the stands doing it as well as we were running. So how will you reflect on this once you've had like a couple of days after coming into camp, scoring those goals, getting the assist? I mean, it's going to take a while to come back down, but then I suppose you have to, because there's league games coming up too.
I know, yeah. I'm actually back to work as well on Thursday, so yeah.
Julianne's boss, maybe give her a day off, please.
I know, yeah. If he's watching this.
Does this have a knock-on impact for other players playing in the league, thinking, actually, you know what, I can play a central role and step up and not be overawed, considering she's just done it against England and France?
I think so. The thing with Julianne is obviously she has that history with the team. She has over 60 caps already, and the difference is that she's had those couple of years out. But like Karen and I have said it a couple of times on Koi Gig in the last few days, in that we look at the league and we generally look at the young players. You know, you look at the likes of Tara O'Hanlon going to City, or whether it's Erin McLaughlin, or the likes of Jessie Stapleton, Jessie Zhu, coming out of it as well. But you never really look at the people that are in maybe their mid-20s or their later 20s or even their early 30s in the way that Julianne is. And she did not look out of place at all in that game. She didn't look out of place in the England game either. And it's very rare you can say that. And I think it's a testament to where the league is at, that someone like her can still be performing at that level in a league that we would often look to be a feeder league to the English side of things, mostly like the WSL and the Championship, that she can be performing at that level and step up against some of the world's best players and look like she's as comfortable there as someone who is playing in the WSL. And I think the thing with Julianne is that she's gone into that squad after 4 years away and done the thing that none of our players who are playing in top leagues have been able to do, which is get the goals. You know, you look at Caruso, like even Leanne Kiernan, Amber Barrett, even Katie McCabe in this tournament, Denise O'Sullivan. Like before tonight, none of them were able to score a goal. It took Julianne, a player that's playing the league at home, to kind of break that barrier for us. So I think it definitely does put a different shape on things and is a reminder of all of us to maybe like also pay attention to what's happening closer to home, as well as looking at opportunities for players a little bit further afield.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Cathy. Great stuff. Thanks a million. We'll return to this a little bit later on with Sue Ronan.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Optimum Nutrition, proud sponsor of the Gaelic Players Association.